outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, for the second time in 8 months, I am not alone in the studio. My goodness, I have someone here today. Hello, Julie.
Hello.
It's my daughter, Julie, because we kind of quarantined together. The family's, I get to have her in studio today and not violate any of California's restrictions at the moment.
There you go.
Though it looks like things are going to hunker down a little bit more coming up.
It sounds like it, huh?
Yeah, I think I have to run down and get a haircut this week.
Yeah, better be prepared.
Probably not going to be able to do it next. We're headed the wrong way right now in Ventura County. So
yep, we are.
What'll happen. So how you doing? Mom of three, working through the COVID 8 months in.
We're plugging along. So are doing good. The kids are all in school or like distance learning school, although our district did go back very minimally, but they did. So yeah, we're doing good. We, you know, weren't having enough excitement this year, so decided to move. So,
oh yeah, you bought a home.
Bought a home.
Moved across town.
Moved across town. It was not on our radar. Like, things just lined up, and I mean, just God had his hand in it because we were not planning on moving, and it all just kind of unfolded. And so that was a bit of a whirlwind, but we're all settling into the new house and a new routine.
So when you moved, you restart the clock on cabin fever like everybody's – not
yeah,
so
it totally like
house.
Goes away for a while. Yeah. It's starting to come back now. We've been in our house for about 2 months, so it's starting to come back a little bit.
Cabin fever, want to go out and play with that friend.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
boy.
Yeah.
And you had a birthday this weekend. Happy birthday, sweetheart.
Thank you. I did.
And you're back by popular demand. I've had some people say, hey, when's Julie going to be back on the podcast? I'm going to try and run her down, see what she can do. But I know you... This COVID's fallen pretty hard on a lot of mothers who've got kids in school.
I think it does. I've talked to quite a few moms lately who are really struggling. I had this guy, you know, we're having some stuff fixed at our house, and he saw that my kids were home. So he's asking me, how are you doing and what are you doing? And he's like, my daughter cries every day.
Oh my
she
gosh.
Has two twins that are kindergartners and a second grader. And I said, I feel for her. She has to have it way harder than I do. Mine are at least old enough to work independently, but my heart breaks for her. Moms that are struggling. I have my days that I struggle too, for sure. It's not what I had ever thought I would be doing. I was never one of those that wanted to homeschool my mom, my kids. So
mom,
my mom's.
You probably did want to homeschool your mom. That'd be a different story.
So this has been hard for everybody, you know,
yeah.
On a lot of different ways. You know, they miss friends, but they're stuck at home and mom's now the teacher. And it's just, it's hard. It's hard on them. They miss activities. You know, my oldest hasn't done any theater stuff in over a year, so it's hard.
And this winter wave where it looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better. And good news on the vaccine, but that's going to take a while to get out once it's approved. It's not quite approved yet, but things look hopeful. And
got to hold on to that.
I looked at Sarah the other night and said, man, I can't even imagine going back to something more normal where you could go out and entertain friends and hang out and be together.
Have somebody in your home.
Oh my gosh. It has been a long bit of a grind, but you know, it helps that I'm reading a book about World War II right now and Churchill and London and being bombed every night by the Germans. And, and then, so reading that on the one hand, I'm reading that alone. And Sarah and I are reading a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and that's all set in World War II as well from the German side of it. It just makes the pandemic seem like not as horrible.
Not as bad.
Yeah, we're not getting bombed every night. People aren't dying. The
city's
not being laid waste.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And I, you know, this is the challenge for our generation, more you and your kids, I think, but it's still not World War II. It's not what grandpa went through.
No, it's not. It's not. That's for sure.
Yeah. So it's just,
I think it's good to remember that it's also not, things aren't normal. I think we've been in this so long that it's easy to just to kind of, this is the new normal or whatever. I tell my kids all the time, like, it's okay to have hard days. It's okay to struggle because this isn't normal. Like, this is still not, we weren't meant to live so, you know, away from other people and not have that kind of interaction. So I keep reminding myself to go easier on them, reminding them if they're having a hard day, you know, it's okay. Like, this is not our usual. Like, it has been now for a really long time, but it's hard.
Yeah. And you have some really social kids and your family,
you've
regularly had people in or kids go over to other people's homes. I mean, so you're a very interactive family. You're not kind of off to yourselves normally.
No, not at all.
This is very different.
Yep.
We're grateful we've been able to keep seeing the kids through all, and
that's how I get my breaks. I need to breathe. Mom and Dad, they're coming your way.
They're coming over overnight. We had a couple of overnight stays.
I'm giving you the whole weekend. You want them?
And yeah, we've always said yes because we don't have anything else going on around here on weekends other than this weekend. This is a big weekend. Holy Week. Holy Week in the middle of fall.
Holy Week in the,
It's Masters Week.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's golf tournament. My favorite golf tournament.
Golf and football doesn't usually mix a whole lot, so.
No, but you know what? Football's definitely going to take a back seat to the golf. And no doubt about it, man. I'm really looking forward to, since I got to walk Augusta National 4 or 5 years ago here with a friend, it's a different tournament now because it's. Yeah. I've been there, so I've seen it.
Yep.
I've experienced it. And that's true of everything in our life, right? You know, you could talk about a lot of theory.
Mm-hmm.
And theory is one thing. And then when you actually experience something on the ground, then you have a whole different feel for it. And I was having a conversation with someone this week about that in terms of their own spiritual journey. You can talk spiritual things. You can know a whole lot of doctrine. You can have all your doctrinal ducks in a row and your Bible reading and all that stuff. But if it's not a journey where you're actually experiencing God's reality mm-hmm. in the course of your day, and embracing it as he makes himself known to you and living in the mystery of that, because it's not something we control. So it's not like every day is a great day with God. God just hangs out in fellowships with it. It's not like that. It's just he's making himself known and there's a way to live inside of him. And where that makes sense, life is good, even when it's rough on the outside. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I got my book finished too. So that's exciting. Yeah, we're at the last bit of getting it to press. So there's a few cover issues and editing issues inside the book. And we had some production delays. We're hoping to get out before Christmas. Now we still might.
Close.
It's going to be a little edgy, but we're going to provide a card for people. So if they want to download and print it, they can give the card away saying,
nice.
I've ordered this book. It will arrive at your house hot off the presses.
Nice.
When it's done. So hopefully that's by the first
option.
Of the year. And if it's not by the first of the year, then we're going to put everyone on the blog until the book comes out so people can follow it that way if they have to. But I think we'll be okay. I don't think we'll have that problem. But this is a book I didn't see coming. I mean,
kind of a whirlwind. I mean, good thing it's COVID, I guess. You had time to be home to work on it.
I did, but it's really something that a college intern I had working for me a number of years ago put together just a whole lot of just dredged through the website, the blog, the articles I've written that have all kind of passed into obscurity and pulled out these brief little nuggets of stuff, you know, a couple hundred words of just an encouragement for every day. And then I've been able now to go through it. And some of the thoughts are like, yeah, I don't still think that way. So we threw those out. And mm-hmm. others from more recent blogs and more recent things, some originals, managed to fill out 365 days of just some kind of daily focus. And so I don't know. I never saw myself doing a devotional book. So it's kind of like, wow, this is really weird. But as I've read through it, as I read through it again last night, because we were doing some proofing on it, I'm going, I really like this. I like what that says. I like the idea of every morning having a more relational focus, because I've done mm-hmm. devotional books. I've been my utmost for as high as guys. I used to do that all the time until the further I got out of religious obligation, the less Oswald Chambers really hit my heart.
Right.
It was a lot of shoulds and musts. And
yeah, it is.
It invites you back into all that performance stuff. And I've intentionally, this book is really to invite people into relational space every day, to give God room to breathe into our heart as to what he might be about today, even though it's not what we want, not what mm-hmm. we're looking for, and definitely not what the world's trying to invite us into. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see as it gets out there how it's helpful to folks. But I think Sarah and I will probably read it through the next year.
I'm a devotional girl, so I'm looking forward to it. I've read a few of them, and I really enjoy that a small thought that I can kind of mull over during the day and taking that time. And I even sometimes write a piece of it on a sticky note and put it in my car as I'm running around or whatever. I was running kids around for school, but I like that kind of taking something with me through it. And sometimes it's a verse or sometimes it's something else I was reading, but I do like those small little snippets to kind of focus on.
Yeah, we get so much influx. Every time you get up, I mean, Sarah and I usually flip on the news because I'm getting ready to work out in the morning. So you're already getting into the world stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Later in the day, I'll find my time to kind of get into scripture and some other things or go for a walk and allow myself to breathe a little more. But I find that that's the really helpful bits because it's so easy to get lured into either the distractions or the anxieties or the prayer, COVID or the presidential election or, you know, whatever. And you get stormed up in all that stuff and you really feel, hey, we're part of a different kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kingdom gives us space to live in what God's saying and doing instead of what we think or the world thinks or anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about it. I'm excited that we've done it. I'm excited it's going to get out there. I'll be glad when it gets off my desk and I don't have to keep looking over edits and things, but it'll be cool. Blue Sheet Media is doing it. And we're actually going to offer everybody $2 off who pre-orders the book. So those of you on a pre-order, oh, nice. $2 off, and we'll have them out somewhere right toward the end of the year. So
God bless that girl that went through all of your words. I'm sure that was like a heck of a job.
It transformed her life. What are you saying? What do you mean? We were paying her, actually, so it was a job. She did really enjoy it. She even tells me now. I mean, that was a number of years ago. She said, I still remember that summer working for you. It was great and wow. Loved it. And yeah, loved it. And I love the way she took like a long blog or article and she broke it down into 8 or 10 nuggets so that if you could read it straight through and you'd give a sense of a theme that might run a whole week. But each one individual on its own. So it just stands on its own. But then the next day you kind of pick into that theme again. So it's reinforced. So she did a great job on it. I've had fun playing with it. And now we got a great artist design cover and whatnot for us. So we're nice. We're really excited. Get up.
Very cool.
Didn't plan on having a book this year. This is kind of like a shock for me. I kind of wish we're doing this book and here it is. So we'll see. But I love the thoughts and I love that those things that have kind of passed into obscurity on the blog. Because blogs last about 2 or 3 days and then they're gone. Yeah. Not new people are finding them. They're not, you know, no one's going back and reading the 500,000 words on my website, plotting all the way back through that. So it's fun for me because I've always thought about that. I put some great thoughts there and it lasted a day or two and then it was gone. And now some of those thoughts are coming back. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Well, I heard from somebody, too, who was digging into the Jesus story. I was like, oh, that feels like a long time ago. But
it was a long time ago.
Wasn't really, though.
No, it was. But it was 8 whole COVID months ago. That's like dog years, man. COVID years like dog years.
It was so great to hear her say how much she's just really relished going through that and how much it's the conversations it started with her kids. And I thought, oh, so great to hear that, you know, they're still out there somewhere. So
I get questions from parents. We're in the Jesus story. Was that it? My kid asked this. What would you say? So
I love that.
If you don't know, Jesus story is the Bible thing I did with Julie's kids. My grandpa did it with the kids, took them through the Bible. Still get to have fun with them about that. In fact, we had them over for Halloween night. They were at our house and trick-or-treating was discouraged in the area we're in. So they came over. So we did a treasure hunt, and I used a little Bible things as clues to get the kids to think through some of that Bible stuff again. So it was fun. It was fun watching them.
So great.
And they did good. They remember a lot of that stuff because I'll ask them now and then about something, and they come up with the answers. So I'm surprised that works. So it's fun that stuff continues to roll on. Well, I've had a number of people say, hey, how's Julie helping her kids through all this media stuff, social media? I know you haven't seen probably the movie Cuties, but that movie about the sexualizing of young girls. And, you know, they're not out in the culture as much. But just people were curious as to what you've learned, what you're seeing, how you're navigating the space with your kids and in terms of dress, in terms of social media, in terms of taking their identity off their friends' likes or whatever.
Right.
And I know that's a deal.
It is. I mean, I'm in the thick of it, to be honest. I've got, in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to have a 13 and a 16-year-old. So, two teenage girls in the house, like, this is, like, kind of the height of all of it. So,
it's all downhill from here?
Yeah. I remember when I had them thinking, okay, at one point, I'm going to have 2 teenage girls in the house. Like, I can handle that. And I'm like, now I'm here. So,
now you're here.
I don't know that...
For like 3 more years.
Yeah.
4 more years. You'll have 2 teenagers, but one will be in their 20s.
Yes. Oh, goodness.
It's hard so fast. Yeah. These kids grow up.
Jeez. You know, it's a hard thing. We haven't done the social media thing. I mean, I have an almost 16-year-old, and the extent of social media that they have is TikTok, which is probably not the best one, but that they do have that.
I don't even have that one.
Yeah.
I heard the Chinese owned it and they're harvesting everybody's data. So I'm like, I'm not doing it.
You know, it was one of those things that was really hard. And we've always kind of, you know, when it comes to phones and social media, we haven't done it kind of followed the norm. Like we gave our girls phones when we felt like it's now a necessity. Like they're off doing things. They need to be able to call me. I need to be able to get in touch with them because they're at the theater or Lindsay's at the dance studio and they're done early or whatever. So it was kind of like, okay, it's now it's something that's kind of more needed. And so that's when they got phones and they got them at different ages for kind of that reason.
And they were older than the friends. The friends had them a lot earlier.
Yeah.
Than-
Amy was an eighth grade. I mean, now they have them in elementary school. Austin's like, my friends have an iPhone. And I'm like, dude, Amy's like the first one to say, I had to wait till I was in eighth grade. So Lindsay didn't wait as long just because she's hyperactive, that child. Like just she's at everything, in everything. She would be at dance for like 4 hours after school. And I needed to be able to get a hold of her sometimes or vice versa. So we kind of managed that more when it was a necessity. And with social media, we, you know, didn't even do the TikTok road until it came to this pandemic. And they had no way of really socializing with their friends. It was like text a little bit. But there was a group of girls or kids that Amy kind of knew that were in that world. And she thought, I can kind of keep up with my friends a little bit. And so we're like, okay, so we did that. Lindsay kind of piggybacked off my TikTok. And I only have one to keep an eye on my children. That's not my thing. But and then we kind of let Lindsay do her own thing as well because she found a lot of friends on there that, you know, it's hard in a pandemic when they don't see people. So that was kind of a way for them to interact.
Plus, but, she's a dancer. So she likes to perform.
So she does
these little dance routines. And
right.
I see her. She starts counting likes. How many followers is what she's been counting.
Well, their accounts are both private. So they are only people who are following them and can see them stuff are people that they know and their friends and people they approve. So that's kind of our way of we're not want them just, you know. I think
going
that,
viral.
Yeah, because they have friends that are like, "Oh, my account, I'm almost up to 1,000 followers," and I'm like, "I don't want to go down that road." Like, at least she's at friends, and that makes me, you know, feel a little bit better. And they're both very good about seeing, you know, who's sending them because they get a lot of requests and making sure that they know those people, you know, and approving them. So, it's hard. I mean, I feel like the thing that I do the most with both of them is talking to them constantly. What are you seeing and what are you doing on there? You know, and honestly, I had to use the app. I wanted to use it. Not that it's my thing at all, but I wanted to see what they're seeing. I wanted to get on it. I needed to be in it because I needed to know what they were coming across and how does this thing work. And I have to say, TikTok is the most addictive social media platform.
Is it really?
It is. I don't know if it's just constant video. I have to say, it's unbelievable how much time I was just flipping. And I was like, and I have social media timers set on my phone. I'm that person because I don't like to be on my phone. I don't want an hour going by and I've wasted an hour on social media. I could be reading a book. So I actually have my own screen time timers on my phone. So when my hour's up for the day, like I have no problem being done with it. I've had plenty. So I could not believe how much time I was spending on TikTok, and I don't like the content. So that one is one that I have spent a lot of time talking to my kids about, like how addictive these things are. And I feel like if I'm going to hand over these devices to them, I want them to understand how they're used, how they're created. They're created to suck you in, take all your time, you know, on their platform. So those are the conversations that I try to really focus on with them.
Yeah, have you watched The Social Dilemma yet with them or anything?
I haven't. They've heard about it from you, I think.
Yep.
I do want to watch it with them. We just, with the move and school, we just have not had time to sit down and watch it. But they are funny because I think they're a little nervous to watch it. They're afraid, oh, mom's going to find out all this stuff and take away our phones. And I'm like, no, I think I told them because we had this discussion and I said, if you are going to use something like this, you need to understand the people who are creating it, like how they're doing it, why they're doing it. Like those are good things to know when you're holding a device like this in your hands all the time.
It really is. And they dramatize these three people who kind of represent social media and how they try to entice you back to your phone. If you put it down for a while, they're like, okay, we're missing Lindsay. So I've been here a while, so I know what can we send to Lindsay to spark her little neurons and, you know, get her hormones going again. And
Yeah,
it is very compelling that way. I've had people who've watched it because we've recommended it here who've just said, I am changing my whole social media because of that, just my use of time, whatever. And, you know, I came out of it going, gosh, I like the way I manage my time. I don't spend a lot of time on social media. Like you said, I would rather read. I would rather do other things that are more challenging than just sit there and scroll through pretty much, and Facebook is probably the only thing I'm really on much, and mostly it's to put stuff on and interact with people there. Mm-hmm. But I don't just scroll through Facebook to read.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, most of the stuff is, it's sometimes you get new stuff, but mostly it's the same things that people enjoy. They keep putting up over and over again. And
right.
Yeah, so I don't feel like I miss anything, but I may spend 10 minutes with it now and then every day or two, where I'll look through the top few things and see what's there.
Yeah.
Get caught up.
But yeah.
I've been real comfortable with the fact that I don't find that media addictive. Mm-hmm. I don't. I find it useful for a live stream to put some stuff out there so people can have access to it and know it's available, but I don't find it personally compelling to spend a lot of time there.
Well, it's amazing to me when I realized how much time I was spending on social media, and I was just like, gosh, you don't realize it. It's so easy just to keep scrolling or moving on or doing whatever. And I, you know, I'm an Instagram person. I love Instagram. But I've taken a step back from social media kind of altogether because I didn't want my kids to see me on my phone as much because they're stuck at home too. Well, let's do other stuff together.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing how easily you just lose track of time in those worlds. So I definitely want to teach my kids how to manage it.
Yeah, that's good.
And not get sucked into it. So.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed when they've been over here and around that they're really pretty informed kids these days. And I don't know how you're doing it with the COVID and the virus stuff. Yeah. They're very aware of that. Uh-huh. They're very aware of the election that was mm-hmm. going on and what the options were and, you know, how they leaned on various things. And then the race thing has really seemed to touch them because that's come up in some really tender moments about racial differences and
yeah.
what some kids suffer because they're of discrimination or prejudice against them. So how are they getting that information? Because that's not coming through social media, or is it? Is it
no,
coming
it's
family
not.
Dialogue? Or?
It's family dialogue. The race thing, I think a lot of what, you know, you and Arnita and Bob had kind of started that before all of that happened. So I was kind of tuned into a lot of that in a different way before the Black Lives Movement and then that kind of started. And I was really deliberate with my kids at discussing some of that stuff and trying to relate it to people that they knew. And Lindsay has a little black girl, the sweetest little girl. We just adore her, that she's in her dance studio. And when I tried to reframe some of this to say, imagine if you were her, that's something that hit Lindsay really hard because this is a girl that she knows. And that was hard for her. And Amy has just this soft spot for everybody. So she really, you know, ate some of that stuff up too. And we watched some videos together and we talked about it a lot. And I think that it really affected them more than I thought it would. Honestly, I thought this was, because I kind of told them at one point, I would like to kind of watch videos and make sure we're doing this discussion, you know, once a week. I kind of wanted it to be something we were doing regularly. And I didn't have to really follow that because it was just coming up regularly. Hmm. And we watch the news. I watch the news with my kids. I know some parents don't like to do that, but the news is on. My kids watch it with us, and we're very open about talking about all of it, the politics, the Black Lives Matter, the, you know, the riots were happening or whatever. And I'm not afraid to show my kids that stuff because I feel like that's where conversation comes from. And so I think that that's where, you know, we've had some really great conversations, and they were really open to sitting and listening and allowing me to kind of help them rethink some of this stuff or just think about it in a different way.
Yeah, that's good.
Than I had before.
Yeah, I never dreamed. If you asked me 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, would I be involved helping a college in Texas develop an anti-racist initiative? Would I be involved in a conversation with the Lutheran Church in Washington State, deal with a social justice initiative? As many conversations as I'm in these days about race and racial issues, mm-hmm. it's taken over. I mean, the book was, the Language of Healing was written about politics, religion, sexuality, and race. Mm-hmm. It was only "and race" because Arnita got involved. Mm-hmm. But man, I am surprised by the number of conversations I'm invited into now. And with a lot of people that I've known for years of various colors, whether it's Hispanic or black or whatever, various shades of brown, who are sharing with me things about their racial past, they're dealing with race in their past that never came up in our friendship before.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think so much of it was, I look at it now, the inequality of the relationship, because I was white, they didn't feel like they're going to invite me into that pain. They got to hide that and be more normalized in what they thought I would want. And that's been hard for me to look back over that many years and say, man, all the conversations I've missed out on because I was insensitive to what they were going through and insensitive enough not to ask. But with the college we're working in Texas, we've had different people share their stories. And a lot, almost everyone who shared their story, two black people, one incredibly challenging story and one incredibly brutal story. And they said, I've never told other people about this. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, you went through that. And one woman, after she got a promotion at campus, had her car smeared with feces, human feces, at some concert thing. And she never told anyone else that. And so she carried that alone, knowing somebody is really angry. I know of on the Nextdoor app that I have for our neighborhood in this part of Thousand Oaks, someone said, do you know who put this in my mailbox? And it was a thing that says, now I know where the racist lives. And it was somebody put in his mailbox because I guess he had had a Trump banner, Trump sign or something on his front yard. And so now that's obviously all Trump supporters were racist, which is not true, but right. And I'd say the bulk of them are not. But it just, there's the anger that's so underneath the surface of that, things that have been hidden so long. And now I'm inside those stories with people. And I'm honored to be there and overwhelmed with the work as a culture we need to do to address that.
Right.
At the same time, I'm hearing people I respect on the right side who are so resisting the social justice narrative. They always want to make fun of it. And I know people have gone too far. Everybody's gone too far. I mean, Colin Kaepernick, when he made his statement, which I think he was trying to say something we all needed to hear, but he made the mistake of wearing socks with policemen on it in pigs in police uniforms or whatever. So you could point to that to dismiss the whole thing. And I was in this conversation Sunday with this Sunday school class from Washington State. And I said, keep your eye on the ball. Don't get your eyes over here. Both sides are doing extremist things that are nauseating. And you can use that to reject the whole argument. Either the reject, oh, there's no racism in America, so don't worry about it, because those people are Marxist and they're Black Lives Matter is this and that as an organization. And so I can wipe out the whole thing. I said, just look, would you be different if you'd been born black in America? That's what I ask my white friends all the time. Yeah. And they don't have to think long to go, yeah, I would. Okay, that's what we're saying. It shouldn't be different. The color of your skin shouldn't matter. It has mattered. We can talk about being colorblind, but it's not working. So let's acknowledge it. Let's acknowledge the biases we have, and let's find a way to fix it. And that's what we're helping this college do. That's what I hope. So I'm going, but this is something. This is what I love about the adventure of following God. 5 years ago, I would never have conceived that I would be in this conversation. And have the opportunities I have and be honored the way I am inside people's stories and people's lives. And yeah, and there's just a lot of work to be done. And yet there's so many people so resistant to it because they see the extremes on the left.
Right.
And everybody's, you know, you're a racist. If you don't say you're a racist, then it proves you're a racist. And there's a whole lot of stupid things being said that are way too far out. I like our knee the other day. We were in a conversation and she just said, you know, anti-racism is simply this. When you see race impacting someone, you hear a racist joke or a racist slur or whatever, that you don't stay silent. You just speak up. And that's all anti-racism means. Well, got other people defining anti-racist as you've got to be out there beating people up and making them apologize in the street for their racist past. And it's not that. Simply, it just means calling it out when you see it.
Yeah.
And helping us have a better conversation invites people into of it. Something happened here. I don't remember what it was, but last time your kids were here and we were talking, I was on the news and we talked about it a little bit. And I could see that the racial injustice touched a space in their hearts. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just an issue to them. Mm-hmm. It, and Austin included, who's going to be 10 in a little while.
Yep.
But, and I love that. I love that you're spending some time with your kids, just helping them understand, which doesn't mean you have to go to either extreme.
Right.
Stay in the middle.
Right.
Stay where there's a problem. Mm-hmm. We can do better as a culture. Equity doesn't exist for people. And skin color matters in terms of how people get treated.
Yeah.
Arnita told the story, which is on election day. She's in a store buying something. And the guy in front of her, 6 feet in front of her because of social distancing, he goes to the cash register, lady asks her, the checker, did you vote today? And he said, yeah, I did. And she said, great, you get a 30% discount. I gave him a 30% discount. And then Arnita walks up, 6 feet behind him, heard the whole exchange, walks up and puts her thing down, and woman's charging her full price. And he just goes, gosh.
Yeah.
How does that world still exist?
That's what I wonder. I just...
Because then you've got to say there are people who have white privilege and aren't really aware of it and don't mm-hmm. know it. And, yeah, we've got to learn mm-hmm. to not give up our privilege in the sense that, okay, it's a bad thing. No, it's how do we get privilege to blacks and browns as well? It's not losing your privilege.
Right.
It's inviting people into that same privilege you get. Give it to them. And then there are people who have white privilege because they want it, cultivate the culture. That's what's disgusting to me.
Yeah.
That you're sitting there behind that cash register and you're going to give a discount to a white person. You're not going to give to the black person. And they're watching the whole transaction and you don't even care.
Yeah.
It's just the way it's done. And that's why when Arnita talks about those experiences are normalized for me. Those are not extreme examples. There's something mm-hmm. that happens every day because of my race.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's those stories from Arnita that was what touched me before all of this. I mean, I can't remember when. It's been a couple of years that you've been in touch with Arnita now, right?
Almost three, coming up on three, yeah.
So that's when there was a shift. That's when the shift started for me. And I started understanding race in a way that I didn't before. A lot of it truly came from listening to Arnita. And so when all of this happened, the first thing I thought, I got to teach my kids a better way. So I was so deliberate on making it, who do we know that is a black girl that I can, how can I make this relatable to them? And because I think that it's just, I have to cultivate that compassion in them for other people. It's part of what it is and part of making them want to crawl into that space if they see something unfair happening.
Yeah, and the friendship with Luisa Maria, too. It's not just black, it's browns, it's Asians, it's all kinds of people that, because, you know, whites came and colonized this nation mm-hmm. and have been the driver behind its politics, its ethics, its whatever. It got a chance to set, and that's true everywhere in the world. There's a majority group in every country in the world, and some cases it's the Arabs or the Africans or whatever that are the majority culture. So that's pretty much true everywhere. But we can't afford to keep going on in a world that doesn't embrace different.
Yeah.
And that doesn't look for equity and doesn't realize that skin color is just that. It's mm-hmm. skin color. That person bleeds the same way you do. That person, they're no different in what they hope for or dream of or their gifts or talents or abilities or wisdom. Mm-hmm. And there's just no difference. But we keep living like there is a difference, mm-hmm. and that's the challenge.
Yeah.
And I love that your kids are being sensitized to that without it being, a cause celeb for them. It's not like you've mm-hmm. just beat that home with them every day and they're little social justice warriors running down the street beating up white people.
That doesn't always work. Yeah. That's not effective.
Yeah. But I love that they're aware of those things. I love that they're aware of the election. Mm-hmm. Bob and Arnita and I were talking the other day. The end of the last 30 minutes of the social dilemma, they're talking language of healing. Everything we've put in the language of healing. The antidote to the social media likes, the abstractness of who likes me, doesn't like me, all that stuff, and the depression that's coming is really from connecting to people one-on-one and connecting past our differences and not growing up in these little information silos that the past election. I mean, I have a good friend who's a Trump supporter. Not from a religious standpoint. He's not a very religious guy, but he just economically likes Trump. Mm-hmm. And I was with him the day after the election ended, which means we don't have a winner yet. They're still trying to figure it all out.
Right.
And the first thing he said to me, because he knows I'm not an avid Trump supporter, not an avid Biden supporter either, for that matter. And he looked at me and he says, boy, I'm already getting the irregularities. I said, you know what? You just ought to wait a minute. In a month or so, we're going to know what irregularities. It's one thing to say, oh, they're there. Then you find out already in the news, people were making stuff up. One guy made up a whole thing about a number of ballots being thrown out, and they questioned him, and he said he made it up because he just wanted it to look bad. And so just everybody pause.
Yeah.
I think if there's been fraud in the election, they're going to find it.
Right.
And it'll be dealt with, because I think that the people who counted the ballots weren't the Republicans or the Democrats. They were election officials mm-hmm. of all stripes in various states and communities. Mm-hmm. And so we just need to get through it and work it out. And but boy, I tell you, the first thing is just, yeah, we got cheated. We got robbed. I'm going, you know what? Don't go there with me. Just don't. I'm not going there with you.
Yeah.
I think by and large, they're going to get it right, and we'll have to figure it out and go on from there. And
Yeah, I think so too.
So, yeah, it's been kind of wild being in that whole conversation and continue to be invited into it. And I'm working with Luis on telling a bit of his life story in a podcast that we're going to do shortly.
That'll be good. He's a good storyteller.
He's a great, and he's got the most freakingly amazing stories I've ever heard of. Of supernatural intervention when he's not even aware. Mm-hmm. He only notices it looking back, even when he didn't know God, wasn't a Christian, and how God was intervening in his life. And it's a great story.
And probably one of the kindest, most helpful guys I know.
To everybody. Yeah, to he's a servant.
To everybody.
Yeah.
Whatever you need, I'm there. Like, and literally has shown up for our family for things that I'm just like, wow. You know, just one of the kindest men.
He told me the other day, Andrea, his daughter, asked him, he said, Dad, who did you have a best friend growing up? And he said, I did. He said, who was it? He says, Raphael. And Raphael, hear his story. Raphael's not mm-hmm. probably a real human being. Raphael is probably an angel that was near him when he was a little boy. And that story is fascinating. And then he said, well, no, Dad, I meant a real person. And he goes, well, I still think of Raphael as a real person. And he said, what about today? Do you have a best friend? He said, yeah. So who is it? He said, it's Wayne.
No.
And I said, you know what, Luis? I've told a number of people recently, probably my closest friend right now is you. It's Luis.
Wow.
I'd just soon talk with you about everything mm-hmm. as I would anybody. And I love other people in my life that I love, including you mm-hmm. and including my wife and lots of other people. But I really enjoy talking to Luis, mm-hmm. watching what God's doing in his life, seeing his compassion for these gangbanging kids that he's spending time mm-hmm. with, and some of those are dying in various ways. One committed suicide recently, jumped off the freeway overpass. I just watch a man's life and love walking beside him. He's getting a great brother.
Yeah, great guy.
Now, also, I got sidetracked from this a minute ago, but when both Bob and Arnita, and I noticed that too, Joe Biden's acceptance speech when he finally claimed that he was the winner, or the other people said mm-hmm. he was, and the last 20 minutes of his speech was all from Language of Healing. Not from our book like he read it, because I don't think that's true, but...
Right.
Now, whether they're serious about it is another story, because I think politicians who win, who are gracious, are always going to say, I'm going to represent all the people, and I realize 70 million people didn't vote for me, and I'm be your president as much as I'm going to be president of the Democrats. And I hope he's sincere.
I do too.
We need that more than anything. Mm-hmm. We need somebody to bring us together, and there needs to be healing between our diversity. I heard this statement the other day and I loved it. I saw it on a website somebody referred me to, said, you know about this group? And it's I'm trying to remember what the name of the group is now. Don't remember. Brave Angels, braveangels.com or something, I think. It said this, it talked about patriotic empathy. Love of country is shown by our concern for fellow citizens.
Mm.
And I thought, well, now that's patriotism, not the flag, and I'm going to wave it here and there. It's patriotism is not just loving your citizens who act, think, and look like you. It's when you care about the nation, when you care about the people who make up that nation. And mm-hmm. I've thought about, church-wise and stuff. You can't say you're just a member of the church as an institution. You're a member of churches. Your life is connected to other brothers and sisters who know the Jesus you know.
Right.
And whether they agree with you on every theological matter or not, that's not the issue. I thought, man, what a definition of patriotism. Mm-hmm. Patriotic empathy is love of country is shown by your concern for your fellow citizens and not just the ones you like or the ones who agree with you.
All of them.
I don't have much hope that that's going to change. You couldn't talk about a more polarizing election, 70 million here, 72 million here, 70, 74, whatever. It's just, we do need, I keep screaming about this, we do need a media that speaks to facts, not to advocacy, and we just don't have that anymore, and that's part of the problem, I think.
Yeah.
People ask me what I do, and I tell you, I find right now, I just get the AP app, Associated mm-hmm. Press. That's the most unbiased news I read from one source, and I don't read from one source, I read from multiple, but mm-hmm. that pretty much just, here's the facts as we know them.
Yeah.
And so that's a resource for people who might want to do it. Also, Bob Arnett and I, they'll be interested in the election stuff. Bob Arnett and I did a podcast, not really. It was a telecast. It was a video thing, a Zoom session that talked about the election. And I'll link it at the bottom of this. If you missed that and want to go back and hear it, you can do that.
Cool.
Anything else? What about the end of it, girl?
Yeah.
Glad you're back in here. I know you've been busy with COVID, so I pretty much left you alone.
Life's a little nuts, but we're working through it.
As people were prodding on me to go, hey, it'd be fun to have Julie back. I'm going, yes, it would. I've told her anytime, but I haven't knocked on that door in a while. So
yeah, that moved through us, but we're better now.
Thank you. We're here on Veterans Day because the kids got a break from school.
Yeah,
so
that's the other problem. It's hard to find time to escape when they're home all day and they need assistance. So
we just dump on grandma for a while.
Yeah.
And the dogs, and they'll have a great time down there.
Work today.
Love your journey, girl.
Oh, thank you.
I love all you're going through and how you're negotiating it. And one day we'll get through this whole COVID thing. And we'll still have the polarity of the nation to deal with. And yet you and I are part. I keep coming back to this every time I think about the political stuff. Yet we are part of a kingdom that transcends politics. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is having his purpose resolved in the earth.
Yeah.
No matter what's happening among the politics, and
that's
my hope.
Yes.
So I get a lot of condolences from people across the country. I'm so praying for you across the world. People in Europe and Australia. Wayne, we're praying for you guys. It was a very tough time for you guys. I do not feel like this is a tough time in terms of the election stuff. That's not the kingdom I live in.
Right.
And I have views about it as you hear if you listen to the podcast much. But man. It's not there. My hope was never in the Republicans or the Democrats.
Right.
Or even now we've got a new president. Maybe he'll do something better for us. I hope so. I think at least his character's a bit better. But honestly, my hope for a transformed world is not there. It's in people like you, sweetheart.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.